Yeah, you're my cabin boys. When we do our photo shoot, by the way, I'm wearing a captain's hat and my cryptid shirt, and you two are wearing shirts that just in big block letters.
Don't wear your own merch.
Big block letters that say cabin boy.
That's not going to happen.
It's happening. I'm getting the cabin boy shirts made this week.
No. You're wearing the shirt of the band that you're going to see.
I'll wear my own shirt anytime I want, bitch.
It is Fright Day. This is episode 35. I'm your host, Byron. And tonight, grab yourself a snack. Pop a tart. Sit back as we review Patrick Kennelly's Excess Flesh. And Ranger Kelly guides us through a Transylvanian forest called Hoi Bachu. In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hi, everybody!
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
It's been a week for me, you guys. A pretty fucked up one.
You've been traveling down some untrodden roads.
So last week, Sam brought up the fact that a movie I'd watched was similar to August Underground. And I realized that I hadn't seen anything to that level of darkness in a while.
Oh, good. Because that's what you need.
I dug deep.
Fuck.
And I found a movie called Slaughtered Vomit Dolls that came out in 2006 by a Canadian director. I'm not even going to call him a director. A Canadian man named Lucifer Valentine.
Interesting. That was his given name?
You know, I'd imagine so. Temporarily, this man has ruined Canada for me. This movie is foul.
You don't say that about anything.
I have
You didn't even say that about Serbian film.
No, because Serbian film is beautiful. It's well shot. It's a production.
You actually should probably edit that out. People will be genuinely scared of you when you say the sentence, Serbian film is beautiful.
No, but it is, though.
That makes you like a...
It's common knowledge that that movie has a high production budget and looks good.
Yeah, in fact, Stuart Gordon, when we interviewed him, he referenced that as one of his favorite international films of recent years.
Serbian film?
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't interview that fucking creep.
You haven't seen it.
Okay, there is a scene where they rape a newborn baby.
Newborn porn, yeah.
Like, it's not really a baby.
It's a doll baby.
Okay, but it's supposed to be a baby.
Well, things in movies represent other things in real life.
Sam, remember when we first talked about this and you were incensed that it was called Serbian film because you're Serbian and it was a disgrace to your... Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not well shot. I understand that it's...
My point is you didn't call it foul. And if you don't call the subject matter of Serbian film foul... What could possibly be called foul?
A movie called Slaughtered Vomit Dolls by a Canadian man named Lucifer Valentine is foul. This movie is about a 19-year-old stripper turned prostitute that is experiencing bulimia-induced hallucinations. About halfway through the film, I realized that I haven't watched this far into a pornography film in a very long time, which is an odd feeling.
It was a porn?
Well, I mean... It basically is. It cuts in and out of these hallucinations that she's having of different people, like case files, basically, in her head of, like, fat, naked people vomiting into toilets, vomiting onto glass, stabbing their eyes out.
So is the vomiting real or simulated?
Real vomit throughout the entire movie. It is foul. See, now I can say it, right?
Yeah.
It stars Pig Lizzie, Princess Pam, Miss Pussy Pants, and a guy named Alan Nasty.
None of those. I looked on IMDb. None of those linked to anything else.
I think this was a one and done for these folks.
Yeah, but is porn listed on IMDb? It isn't.
I mean, technically, is it's not a pornography film.
Those sound like porn star names.
It does sound like porn star names, but I think they're more like degenerate names.
Pseudonyms that were just for the film.
Or like extreme artists.
Yeah.
People who are really good at throwing up.
Yeah.
Like a couple years ago, I was at South by Southwest when Lady Gaga had that paint puke on her during a drum solo. Do you remember that?
No.
I missed that.
Yeah, you did. You did miss that. So I got my fill for the year. I think I'm calling it for the darkness. Other than,
Jesus,
there are two more films by this man, One called Regorgonated Sacrifice, and then one called Slow Torture Puke Chamber.
Hmm. What is with him and puke?
He's the Prince of Vom.
He's found a niche.
I mean, while no one likes these films, I'm sure there's a really dark audience that loves
them. That's so kind of disturbing films that you, to think you about.
Dare someone or yourself to watch.
When I hit that halfway point, I did definitely think about turning it off, but I do have that rule that I need to finish it and I need to see it just because.
Who is something it that said
yes, it's something.
An artist never looks away?
You I don't know. I think I said that, actually.
Why is it was something that you need me. To know?
I thought it was George Miller.
Because I'm a connoisseur of the dark arts, of horror.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound artistic. That just sounds asinine.
You know, it is asinine. Somebody made but it. I did need to know that it's asinine. In fact, there's a movie by this director in production right now called Vomit Gore 4, Black Mass of the Nazi Sex Wizard.
You want to know
that
why
that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Byron, do you want to know why he's making more movies?
I don't know why.
Because assholes like you watch his shit.
Well, I'll just say out loud that I didn't purchase it.
Okay, well, that's good.
I'm just saying.
I'm not judging you. I'm not judging you for any of this. All the judgment's coming from that end of the table.
Yeah, I'm judging. Don't support that disgusting.
At least it's quiet judging.
Yeah. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I don't think needs a platform.
You would rather people not experience any sort of vomit gore.
Well, I mean, just things like that. What is the artistic value in that? I think that it degrades the rest of... I mean, it's like muck to me. Like, what the... why?
Well, I guess maybe I sound like I'm defending this movie.
You do.
I gave it zero stars.
Okay.
I do want you to know that.
Zero.
Yeah, I heard no defense.
I was just explaining what it is. And I think you were saying that it shouldn't exist. I'm not saying it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good at all. Although I am saying that I'm glad I watched it. I want to take in as much knowledge of horror as I can. And this, unfortunately, is part of it. Even if it's a puke porn gore film, you know.
So weird.
But if you go to FrightDay.com, you can read my review of it. It is our first zero star.
It is.
Or did Muck get a zero?
No, I think I gave Muck above 5%, a zero, maybe. Didn't I? Yeah.
Oh, even Muck got a star for shooting in 4K.
Throughout the movie, every shot is irritating, though. The audio is filtered, slowed down, reversed, or sped up.
So is this guy just like cracked out on crazy drugs?
Cracked out on crack, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. It's really weird, though. You don't normally associate that kind of shit with Canada. Canadians are chill.
I know. That was my biggest issue, is that I love Canada.
What's this guy's name again?
His name is Lucifer Valentine.
Just keep in mind, Tim Hortons and a whole country of really friendly people.
Oh, God. It does help to think about those Hortons donuts.
And some fantastic death metal.
Really?
Yeah. Archspire, Gorguts.
Would you do a top 13 Canadian metal bands list for our website?
Possibly.
Think about it.
Just do it.
I did watch something that kind of balanced out the awful that I was feeling. A documentary called An Honest Liar, which is about James Randi, aka the Amazing Randi, who's a retired stage magician and scientific skeptic, which is an interesting thing for a magician to be doing.
So this fits kind of right into the Kelly's Cryptids wheelhouse.
It does, kind of. Yeah, I think you would really like this. It's new on Netflix. As a child, he decided to learn every trick performed by Houdini, and he improved a lot of them. Eventually, he quit due to health concerns and began investigating and challenging paranormal claims and pseudoscientific pursuits, exposing faith healers, psychics, and con artists publicly, like on the Johnny Carson show or other public venues, like people like Uri Geller.
Yeah.
He's a famous spoon bender. Like, he would shake the spoon, it would melt in the middle or something.
I spent a lot of time trying to emulate that as a child.
Couldn't do it, huh?
I actually have memories that I could.
I don't think that's...
Not the melting, just the bending.
Well, maybe you were just bending it with two hands.
No, I just stared.
Yeah, last night, I took the ice cream out. And I didn't wait for it to thaw.
And what happened?
I bent the spoon.
I thought the ice cream melted. And you're like, oh my God.
Well, that would have fucking blown me away.
Hey, Byron.
Yes.
Valentine made another movie, a documentary called Black Metal Veins, about heroin addicts.
Oh, fun. The main character is also a heroin addict in the movie I did watch. But let's move past it. We gave Valentine a lot of time and we gave me a lot of heat over it so far in the show.
I'm just trying to dig into his background.
Apparently, you're trying to dig right into my soul. But let's continue on. Also, it focused on Peter Popoff. You may not know the name, but he's a faith healer. He'd invite people on stage and say, "Be gone!" and like slam their head with his fist and they'd fall and they're like, their cancer would be gone. Yeah.
There are lots of people that do that though.
But he's the one you think of. But the amazing Randy inserted a security guard with some sort of signal detecting device to detect if there's radio frequencies going on. And he captured the signal and recorded it of his wife telling Peter Popoff who was in the audience and what ailments they had, so he could call out and pretend like God was calling
speaking through him.
Very interesting. He came up with a bunch of methods like that. He also headed groups that infiltrated public media, like fake psychics, and would try to get people to believe in them just to prove that it's complete bullshit.
I love his mission.
It's incredible. I think you'd really like this guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. The story also goes into his longtime relationship with his assistant, Jose Alvarez, who got a false passport to move to the United States. So there's this big kind of mid-story issue. It's really cute. He came out as gay at the age of 81. It's a nice little heartwarming story as well. So That's an Honest Liar. It just came out on Netflix. I think everyone should check it out.
Wow.
Sounds awesome.
Does that make you feel better about me?
Yeah, I do like it. I'm just...
No.
You can tell me about Lucifer.
Okay. So his real name isn't Lucifer. He hides his identity. Like, obviously, but it's not just a pseudonym. Like, he hides who he is.
That's not his real name.
This changes everything. No, but like, he won't have photos taken of him. He's like, what's his name? Burial, the musician that refuses to let his actual
identity
be known.
Just to hide his creepy douchebaggery.
Yeah.
And I actually I want to back up a second. I do not want to compare him to Burial because Burial is actually a really good musician.
Well, that's true. But get
so I need to make a
Lucifer's
clarification.
Lucifer's an asshat. We got it.
So it was actually a vomit horror trilogy that he made. So three of them. And
Byron's committed to watch the next two.
I've thought a lot about if I'm going to finish this up or not.
So here are a couple quotes from Mr. Valentine for you. Okay.
I'm a Satanist, always have been, and that's how my parents raised me, bless their hearts.
Okay.
Sure. That's honestly, the whole Satanist thing doesn't matter.
All right. But although the extremely grisly murder scenes of both slaughtered vomit dolls and regurgitated sacrifice.
Don't say it wrong.
Yeah, sorry. Involved fake blood and prosthetics. The acts of regurgitation done by the actors are real. In your opinion, is vomiting as much of a pornographic turn on as sperm ejaculation? Okay, here we go.
Is that a question from...
For him.
Yeah.
Okay. Answer.
Someone, in my case, I prefer a hot girl vomiting, preferably on my cock that has been rammed down her throat in order to cause her to deep throat gag and puke on me, thereby facilitating the incredibly fun phenomena known as puke fucking, at which time I would take my vomit covered cock and using the same young lady's puke as lubrication fuck her in the ass, and from time to time as she's being anally puke fucked, I would take my cock out of her ass in order to perform a vomit style ATM or ass to mouth, which means that my cock, now ceremoniously covered in the vomit and shit of my female companion, is momentarily removed from her ass and placed directly into her mouth so she can suck her own vomit and shit off my cock. As you can imagine, it's quite romantic.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm not, I just wanted to like lay that out there as like...
How does that one edit down, Byron?
There.
I would prefer that not go on air. I'm just saying he's kind of a bad person, but he was raised in South Africa.
Oh, wow. Okay.
His parents, he seems to like a lot, but I think that they were bad humans from what I can tell here.
That's tough to say. I mean, some people are just bad people.
He won't even say what nationality he is. Like, literally, he's so concerned about keeping his identity hidden.
That's
like,
weird because nobody cares.
I think
he's a nobody.
I mean, he's obviously.
Yeah. And his whole movie, Regurgitated Sacrifice, revolves around April 5th, 1994, when Kurt Cobain killed himself.
Wow. I did not know that.
Because he's obsessed with Kurt Cobain. Which makes me think also this whole heroin thing, I think he's got to be a junkie.
You think so?
Yeah, there's just a lot of heroin arrows.
What if we interviewed Lucifer Valentine on the show? Do you think he'd call in?
I would do an interview with him.
No.
I would confront him as a worthless pile of scum.
Let's give it a shot.
Okay.
Kelly or Sam?
I'm not doing it.
No, what did you watch?
Oh, I watched a movie called Night Watch.
Is that a vampire movie?
No, there is Night Watch, which is the Russian vampire movie from the late 90s.
Okay.
This one is called Night Watch from 1998. and it stars Ewan McGregor, Nick Nolte, Josh Brolin, and Patricia Arquette. It's a remake of a Danish film of the same name, although Steven Soderbergh actually wrote the script for this. And it revolves around Ewan McGregor's character, who's a law student, and he takes on a job at a morgue so he can study and earn some extra cash while he's taking his law school classes. He starts to be affected by the paranoia that comes from being surrounded by no one but the dead and darkness. Simultaneously, there's a rash of serial killings, the victims of which end up in the morgue, and signs start to point to our friend Ewan McGregor as possibly being the perpetrator. Nick Nolte plays an incredibly creepy detective that seems a little off. Josh Brolin is the thrill-seeking friend that keeps escalating pranks further and further and further, and Patricia Arquette's the loving girlfriend. So it kind of keeps you guessing right until the end. I definitely call it more suspense thriller than outright horror, but it's very atmospheric. And I think it deserves better than the 23% that it has on the tomato meter.
You've been watching a lot of guessers.
Yeah.
Some keeping them.
Well, I don't know if they're so much guessers as maybe I'm just not that bright.
I doubt that.
Everything's a surprise.
Come on.
It's a new day every day.
Yeah. And was that on Netflix?
Streaming on Netflix. And I definitely enjoyed it. I recommend it if you like, you know, serial killer, murder, thriller type movies.
I must have seen the image of it. What year did you say it came out?
1998.
That sounds about right. How about you, Kelly? Oh, blow right into that.
I'm really sorry, but...
No!
Like, yeah, oh, letter Valentine.
No, like, this guy's genuinely horrible. The more I read, the more horrible he gets. So the girl in the movie was actually his girlfriend.
Sure.
Okay, and they all are porn actors. He's in the porn industry. She's in the porn industry. Okay, just for the record.
So I watched a porn movie.
You did.
Okay.
Okay, so...
And I watched so much porn
this
week.
It's listed on IMDb.
I know.
But listen to this. So when he first met her, this is how these movies came to be.
Sure.
Okay, when he first met her, she was a junkie. She was 92 pounds. She was basically dying, and she was doing hardcore underground porn and barely making it through scenes before collapsing. And she got kicked out of her father's house and showed up on Valentine's doorstep one night, basically begging for help. And he let her in and agreed to take care of her as long as, here's another quote from him.
Okay.
She did everything I told her to do no matter what and gave me permission to film her at any time doing anything. Absolutely nothing was off limits and it was all at my discretion, not hers.
So essentially, he f***ing... like completely took advantage of this girl to film these movies.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's what I watched this week.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite quotes that I wrote down was, "I don't know what's left of me, but you can fuck it if you want." It was a dark day.
That sounds like that was the story. Like, and he even says this. He's like,
"We had no choice but to film these movies. These movies were what was happening to us. I was mercilessly filming and Amira was unbelievably performing."
Yeah.
I mean, I see what he's saying with the scenes with her, but the flash-ins of other segments.
Whatever.
They're puking on like pieces of glass just so you could see it because you need to see more of the puke.
Well, it's like Jim Morrison used to have girls sit on a glass table and pee. Yeah.
There was a scene with what's that guy's name? Alan Nasty?
Yeah, and is apparently
Mr. Nasty.
He's a porn star as well.
Apparently all of them are because they're all in the porn industry.
He was just repeatedly vomiting into a pint glass and drinking it and vomiting.
That sounds like your friend.
He didn't drink it.
Oh, I thought he did.
Kelly, what did you watch?
I had a friend that puked a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That happens.
Alcohol related.
But sure. He actually is a puke fetishist. That's why he made these movies.
I mean, that makes sense.
Like, and that's why he made her do those things. And he's a fucking rotten human. Not for being like whatever he's into, that's fine. But to take advantage of some like completely broken human and basically... Oh my God.
I get it.
At least he doesn't have a soapbox.
Kelly, what did you watch this week?
I watched this cool movie.
It's called Slow Torture Puke Chamber.
Yeah.
Did you watch something? Say no.
Oh my God. I just...
Stop it.
He was fucking his sister for the first 10 years all of his adult life.
All right, Kelly, we gotta stop.
Oh my God.
That's enough.
How could a person keep getting worse?
Stop it.
For real, quit digging and let's get the show
going. I watched
this
great movie this week called Nomad, and it stars Pierce Brosnan, and it was made in 1986, and it also stars some lady who was on Young and the Restless or something for like a dozen years. But
Barbara Crampton?
No, it was not Crampton.
Okay.
It was actually a super interesting movie. It was kind of artsy and had, you know, some bad guitar riff music from the 80s, but it was a really interesting story. And it was about an anthropologist who studied nomadic tribes and, unbeknownst to him, basically uncovered an ancient tribe, Antarctica, I believe it was. And the ghosts of that tribe kind of haunted him, but they took on the form of this punk group of kids in LA that started stalking him, and then he started photographing them as part of his anthropology research, and he ended up getting killed by them, and he goes into the hospital. As he's dying, he whispers into this doctor's ear what had happened to him, but he's whispering in French because he speaks French, and she ends up, it's almost kind of like, I guess, Fallen? Is that the right movie? Is it, Sam, is that
where the
ghost can jump from person to person. And that was almost what happened. But it was really different from anything I've seen. It was very interesting. In fact, I think I'll probably watch it again with a little bit closer attention to the way that they weave it, because it was a very unique movie.
Especially for the time.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I thought it was very smart.
Yeah, and who doesn't love a Bond movie? I mean, really.
It's not a Bond
movie. No, but it's a Brosnan movie, so it may as well be a Bond movie.
Actually,
it's Bond.
In, what was it, 1986?
Yes.
It was a Remington Steele movie.
It was a Remington Steele movie. I'm so glad you said that, honey. This is why we're married. I was going to say that. Aww.
Is it not horror?
No.
It's a mystery show. It was like a...
Pierce Brosnan worked for the Remington Steele Detective Agency.
Fun.
Yeah.
He was Remington Steele.
No.
That's a cool...
He came to take on Remington Steele because it was actually female running the detective agency, and everybody thought Remington Steele was a man because back in those days, nobody would trust a woman. And he came in and filled the part of Remington Steele. Clearly, you weren't a big enough fan.
Clearly.
Just saying.
Did you watch anything else this week?
Yes. We watched Night Stalker. Was it Night Stalker? Night Watch.
That was the movie you talked about a minute ago when you were reading about Lucifer Valentine.
Yes. So I know that you guys want me to stop talking about Lucifer Valentine.
We do.
But, I feel so bad.
Okay, no, but listen to this. This is going to make you feel worse than anything.
Okay.
But it shouldn't make you feel bad. It's not like you knew all this going in.
That's true.
I'm just saying, try not to support him any further, okay?
I didn't.
We've already established this.
Right, but don't spread his movies anymore.
Okay.
So listen to this. His sister Cinderella, who was a younger sister who was blind, who he took care of his whole life, was his girlfriend also, and they very likely would have gotten married, but she took her own life on New Year's Eve 2006.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay? So listen to this. No, Byron, it gets worse.
This sounds like mythology that he created for himself.
Byron, it gets worse.
She threatened many times to do this, to drown herself in a bathtub after overdosing. And I filmed it quite often, never thinking she'd actually do it. One version of Cinderella imitating Angela's death is in black and white footage right near the very end of Regurgitated Sacrifice.
It was actually in the end of
this movie. Footage of his little sister simulating drowning when she actually did kill herself drowning.
No, the end of this movie, Slaughtered Vomit Dolls, there is the same scene. Maybe he put actual footage in, because God, I hate talking about this movie. At the end of this movie, the main character ties something around her neck with weights, does drugs, puts herself in a bathtub, and then lets the water rise over her face. And I think that's what you're talking about, but maybe in a later film, they actually show the real thing.
She simulated... The reason he had her do that is because that's what Cinderella did to herself over and over again, his sister. And that's how she killed herself.
Well, fuck.
Huh.
All right. I ruined everyone.
No, you didn't. You didn't, but Lucifer Valentine did. Moving right along, though, to a much more upbeat movie, 100 Ghost Street, The Return of Richard Speck.
It sounds fun.
Okay, so this was a movie that was not very good, and Sam mocked me for having it on my Netflix list, but that's okay.
Netflix gave it a half-red star.
Because you know what? Not only did the director of this not rape his little sister.
Okay, God, get off my bed.
But the director of this was so embarrassed of it that he removed his name from the movie and it's uncredited. The director is now uncredited.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is hard to do.
That's what Ty West tried to do with Cabin Fever too.
It was a valiant attempt. So Martin Wichman, who was the
Martin Wichman.
Yeah, but listen to this, Byron. You would know him from something else he did. A little thing called K is for Klutz in ABCs of Death.
Fun. Okay.
Yeah. He apparently isn't horrible, but this movie was not great. I thought you would appreciate it, Byron, because it's centering around the famous serial killer, Richard Speck, who went on a really horrible killing spree. I think it was 8 female victims. Basically, it's a, you know, grave encounters scenario type deal where these paranormal investigators go to the place where he had killed all of these women. And they start investigating, and then all these ghost things start happening to them. And
I completely forgot about Richard Speck until just now. Yeah, he's a nurse killer.
Wasn't it like in a hospital that he killed them all?
I don't know if he killed them in the hospital.
But I think he killed them. It was all in like one spree. It was like a massacre. It wasn't like over a period of time.
Yeah, he did kill them all on the same day. He broke into a townhouse in a Chicago neighborhood and started attacking a bunch of dormitory nurse students. How many did he get in one day?
I think 8.
Oh my God. That's the difference. He's not a serial killer. He's a spree killer.
Same thing.
Or a mass murderer. Big difference.
So the people in the movie start getting killed, obviously.
Cool.
It was pretty bad, but it was a cool concept.
Not found footage.
Yeah, it's found footage. Of course it's found footage.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The footage has been released by the victims' families.
Of course it would.
I would say that anyone... God, yeah, uncredited. You could even get the Alan Smithy on it.
I love the Alan Smithy.
I know.
How many horror Alan Smithies? We should do a top 13 horror Alan Smithies.
That actually would be a great list.
Write it down. Frightday.com.
Okay, hold on.
Did you watch anything else?
No, that was it. Well, I mean, I watched a lot of Californication, but that doesn't count.
Unless you hate misogyny. Pretty horrific in that case.
Yeah, but the misogynist keeps getting beaten down again and again and again.
It's true. He doesn't win, you know.
He's never winning. You're right. He's very misogynistic, but I think over time he's learning that that doesn't get him anywhere.
Oh,
God. It's sad, though. It seems so autobiographical.
I'm going to have to cut us off.
Sorry. Top 13, Alan Smithy. Down.
Kelly, I don't know much about the woods. I live in a tower in an attic. Attic tower by myself. But I do know a little bit about Transylvania.
Bachu!
Bless you.
No. Hoya Bachu.
What?
Yeah, that's the forest I'm going to talk about.
In this week's edition of Kelly's.
Captain Kelly's.
That's enough Kelly's cryptic.
Captain Kelly's. The fans want Captain.
I hate all this so much.
Kelly's cryptids and conspiracies.
Captain.
Kelly's cryptids and conspiracies.
So there is a really incredible place in Romania/Transylvania, and my geography skills are not up to par, but it's my understanding that Transylvania is no longer a place.
But a state of mind.
Former Transylvania is where present-day Romania currently is.
Transylvania is a region in Romania. It's just a geographical area.
Like the Appalachian Mountains?
I mean, that's a mountain range.
Yes.
The Pacific Northwest?
It's in the Carpathian Mountains of Romania.
So what's the deal?
Well, there's this incredible forest there. It's called Hoia Bachu. This place, it's kind of a weird... It's known as the Bermuda Triangle of Romania, which makes no sense because A, it's on land, and B...
Has nothing to do with Bermuda.
Right. There aren't ships that disappear there. There aren't planes that disappear there. Apparently, there have been a couple of people that supposedly disappeared. But I think they just use that as a name to try and attract attention to the fact that this is a very strange place. And they think they can sum it up by calling it the Bermuda Triangle of Romania.
You'd think that the birthplace of Dracula would be enough for them. It's a bit selfish.
Yeah. Well, Vlad the Impaler really... is not nearly as stellar or controversial as people might think.
I think he's pretty cool.
I mean, he's fine.
He impaled people.
He's nothing like a Bigfoot.
They were a lot, well.
Or a Chupa.
He was a real historical figure.
Yeah.
So are Chupas and Big Feet.
All right, whatever.
Treat them bigger.
Sure.
Ghost Adventures. Zach Baggins himself went on location in Hoia Bachu a few years back. The two coolest stories that I have heard about it, one of them is supposed to be kind of the origin story of the Hoyabachu forest, or at least one of the early stories. A shepherd with a flock of sheep completely vanished, never to be seen again. But perhaps more creepy was a story, and this is almost an urban legend at this point. There aren't any specific details that I can find regarding exactly when or exactly who, but there was a little girl who disappeared in the forest. She walked back out of the forest 5 years later wearing the same clothes that she wore when she walked in, and she had no memory of what had happened for the last 5 years.
According to who, though?
According to Urban Legend.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right. Hoyabachu Forest is listed as second on the list of most strange and unique forests in the world.
Listed where?
A listicle.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to know.
Other people call it world's most haunted forest. It is interesting because though there are strange ghostly sightings there, kind of the dominant force seems to be UFOs.
Okay.
And there were actually UFOs photographed there in the 60s and 70s. And a lot of people reported things like abductions in that area. So in terms of being a Bermuda Triangle, I guess that's what they're trying to draw a connection to.
Have you seen these pictures?
Yeah, and I'll post the pictures. One of them in particular is decent. I mean, it's from the 60s, so it's tough because they're very grainy and difficult to make out any sense of detail. But
I'm going to start posting companion pictures on the actual podcast page.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Of each episode.
Brilliant so plan.
It gives you a reason to go to FrightDay.com.
Well, you need another one.
Kind,
no.
Look at us. We are so on the same wavelength tonight, sweetie.
Are you psychic?
Do you want to try and bend spoons together later?
Does that mean eat ice cream? Or
no. Yeah.
Is that code for ice cream?
No, it's code for bend spoons with our mind.
Okay.
Ah. Ooh, I have a new segment at the end of the show that I would
Sam's Jams?
No, it's not. It's not that. It'll never be
Thank
that.
Fucking Christ.
No, we really need to get that. Like the top 13 metal bands from Canada, Sam's Jams.
Okay. Shh. Kelly, you'll hate this segment. I can't wait.
Oh, no.
Oh, I am so excited. I can't wait to find out what it is.
I assume that the area is fairly remote.
I believe it is. If Zach Baggins is any judge, he had to drive a ways to get there. In the show.
Okay.
It made it look like it was fairly remote, but because I haven't been there, hopefully we'll be sometime. It is very dark and there are interesting patterns that the trees grow in. There's actually a vortex.
I knew you were going to say it.
Yep.
I saw it in your face.
There's a vortex north of Missoula in Columbia Falls called the House of Mystery. Yeah. I've actually spent the night there before.
I went there with you.
Yep. It was fantastic, Byron.
Oh,
we should post a picture of us at the...
Do you have that one?
I do.
It's like 10 years old.
It's like 15 years old.
Man.
I should post a picture of that. It's fantastic. But, you know, a lot of it is obviously beefed up. It's like the mystery spot in Santa Cruz. They build things to exaggerate the effect, but there really is an effect. It doesn't have to be something paranormal. It can very easily be magnetic. But there is something there. And one of the things that's very typical in those areas, trees will grow sideways and they'll grow in these really weird patterns that don't seem to align with typical tree growth in an area where gravity behaves perfectly normally.
That happens at, I think it's called the Devil's Road in Pennsylvania, over by the DuPont house where they have satanic rituals.
So there must be a vortex there as well.
You traveled that road not too
I did.
Long ago.
Yeah, real spooky road.
Seems like a spooky road.
I love the DuPonts so much. Mm. Inbred, satanic, rich people.
Bazillionaires.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's where Valentine lives.
Maybe.
Could be.
I doubt it. You think, oh my God, what if Lucifer Valentine is part of the DuPont family?
It would explain a lot.
It would explain a lot.
Did we just bust this open?
I think we did.
Kelly just solved her first conspiracy.
So this Transylvanian vortex.
These trees grow sideways. It's very similar to what you and I have seen at the House of Mystery. It's very similar to what Sam and I saw this spring at the mystery spot in Santa Cruz. In these areas, there are always interesting things that seem to happen. Native American legends, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the legends surrounding Hoyabachu are...
Bless you.
Thank you. That was good.
Sorry.
They're more closely related to things like shepherds and sheep, because that's the history there rather than Native Americans.
Cruise liners, jumbo jets.
They just pop up there?
No, they don't. They don't. There are disembodied voices that come up. There are these flying discs that are reported. And that was really kind of peaked in the 60s and 70s. Oh, you can? Let's hear it.
Lost falfers.
I don't think falfing's a thing in Romania.
Are you sure?
Not sure, but I'm pretty confident.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of the theories surround this area being an actual dimensional portal because that would explain discs showing up. It would explain voices. There's some really fun stories that are obviously completely fiction on Creepypasta.
I'm glad you say
that. What's the Reddit page, the No Sleep page, Reddit No Sleep or something like that?
I could not possibly keep track of all the subreddits that are
No, but this is like
shit.
A completely separate, like it's almost like a separate thing. It's like Reddit No Sleep. It's basically like Creepypasta. And there are a couple of great stories up there as well. Again, fictional. I wish people would get their subjects and verbs aligned. It would make it a lot easier to read those stories.
You're a stickler.
Oh my gosh. There was three of us that night. That's the first sentence of the story. Because the story I actually read, it was good. But the first sentence, there was three of us. It makes me want to just reach through a computer and choke someone until they can make their subjects and verbs agree.
Yeah, there was it's apostrophe S was.
Yeah.
That's assault.
Somehow you and I are the violent ones, the sick ones.
I'm just trying to protect the sanctity of grammar. There was a scientist, actually a biologist, Alexandru Sift, and he in the 1960s was one that took these photos that we will be posting. You can certainly be the judge. They aren't very different from other photos you'll see during the same time period of flying anomalies, we shall say. There is an area in Hoya Bachu, where it is said that nothing grows. Now, this is kind of an interesting statement because it's very clear from all the photos that grass is actually growing there very easily, but nothing else will grow there. Some people believe because that's the center of the vortex. Other people believe that that's actually where the porthole exists. A few different theories about it. You can see it if you look at Google Earth, according to stories. I have not looked myself, but I'm sure Sam will get right on that.
Has anyone looked at a topographical map of this? Is it in the tundra?
I actually don't know. All I know, it's nearly a perfect circle and nothing other than grass grows there. Soil samples have been taken and there's nothing that should prevent the growth of plant life. It's the same soil that is everywhere else around there. But for some reason, nothing else grows. And a lot of photos taken in this area will display faces or outlines of bodies or weird lights that don't show up other places in the forest. This is also a place where when ghost hunters, people like Mr. Baggins, go into the woods to try and investigate, they have very strange reactions with their electrical equipment, and that seems to be focused in this area. So it can happen anywhere in the forest, but most of the incidents happen in this place.
Sam, what are your thoughts on vortexes?
Bullshit.
You don't think that there's magnetic anomalies around the world?
I think there could be deposits of magnetic minerals in the earth.
See, that's it. That's all it has to be. It doesn't have to be anything.
I think it's not mystical. I think that the tree is going in weird directions. That happens for a lot of reasons all over the world.
Could be wind.
Yeah,
that's because there are vortexes all over the world.
Damage. It could be from something as simple as a deer or elk rubbing its horns, shed velvet on it when the tree's young and permanently stunting it in weird directions.
Yeah, but when you see groves of entire trees, huge bunches of them going in that direction, there's got to be something going on with.
In the Pacific Northwest, one of the explanations for those trees is that the indigenous peoples would use them as part of their burial rites. They would take younger, limber trees, carve the branches, and bend them in such a way that they could place a canoe kind of cradled in the branches with their dead.
Now you're just talking about the octopus tree, you big jerk face.
Well, the octopus tree is just one of them. But I mean, there are a lot of reasons. I'm just saying that's one explanation for one region that has weird trees. I mean,
also, forgot to compliment you on your t-shirt. That is a zombie eating a brain burger, and I love it.
Keeping with the theme of eating things tonight and throwing them up.
Absolutely. You're a theme man, and I appreciate it. Any stories from this place?
Well, the story of the girl is kind of my favorite story. The story of the shepherd disappearing as the origin story. And I actually think that that is what it's named after. I'm not sure what Hoya Bachu translates to. I don't know if it's the name of the shepherd or if it means shepherd, but the name is connected to that incident. I do know that.
Okay.
Yeah. So there have been researchers from all over the world that have gone to study there because it is kind of interesting just from a scientific standpoint. Obviously, nobody's come up and said, yes, there's a portal here, but...
Well, duh.
Right.
There's no portals. There's no such thing.
Yeah, we'll see.
There was. Are we going to talk about the Manhattan experiment?
Yes, we absolutely will.
Cool.
You know, in the next few weeks. I've got a couple things lined up, but we will get to it. It's a cornerstone of Kelly's cryptids.
I like that one because there are physics involved in real things. Ships.
So wait a second. Are you saying that you buy into that? I can't wait. Okay, so back to the forest. You know, a lot of people take this seriously because it is actually a really beautiful place to travel as well. So it has come to be as popular, perhaps even more popular than the Dracula legend in bringing tourist groups to Transylvania. Travel and Leisure magazine did an article on it. The BBC has done articles on it. Nick Cage visited a couple years ago. I mean, it's getting some pretty serious street cred.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think at some point we need to go camping there. Although I say that out loud, and as soon as those words leave my mouth, I realize that I would never make it through a night there. I would completely lose my shit. It'd be so scary.
Baby steps. We'll find something in between, and then you'll get the courage up. You know the audience wants some sort of live podcast from Hoya Bachu.
We should do a live podcast from House of Mystery.
I don't know.
Out underneath like, the cherry tree first.
I was terrified staying at the House of Mystery.
What are you scared of? It's a vortex.
The ghosts.
Come on now.
Man, the ghosts.
They hammered ghost smiley vortex. Faces on the trees.
Well, that was the owners, not the ghosts.
I'm just saying, there's no ghosts.
I'm like, right. Hoya Bachu Forest is an interesting place. The photos that you will see up on the site will show some of the poltergeist activity that has been captured there. It will show the tree growth and it will show the UFO picture. I have no idea how those things tie together, but I do think that there's something interesting going on there. There seems to be something attracting activity of some sort. And again, as I say so frequently, it could be something that is not remotely paranormal, but rather completely explainable, and we just don't have the explanation yet.
Whether or not there's something supernatural happening, there's nothing as cool as the concept of a haunted forest.
Ooh, true. I agree.
Nick Cage would agree with you. You guys have a lot in common.
I don't know. We don't own a haunted mansion in New Orleans, though.
No, we don't.
I didn't know that.
Actually, he think he sold it when he went bankrupt. No. He owned one of the most haunted buildings in New Orleans.
So I wonder if he's a cryptozoologist himself.
You don't know much about Nick Cage? Maybe that'll be next week's Kelly's Cryptozoologist.
Digging into Nick Cage's paranormal endeavors?
He very much believes in ghosts.
We try to find out whether there's such a thing as Nick Cage.
Nick Cage collects haunted memorabilia. Skulls.
So that's who we're competing with on eBay. That's why we never win anything.
I wonder what his username is. Johnny Blaze?
Cameron Poe 662.
Oh, that's good. I like that one. That's probably it. Did you learn anything about Nick Cage? Is that what you're Googling?
Well, I'm just trying to get into his ghost beliefs. But unfortunately, everything I'm coming up with is just he and Ghost Rider. So it's going to take a little digging, but sure. I'll get there.
I think it deserves a segment.
His son used to be in a black metal band.
Yeah, he's a bit of a freak.
I wonder how old his son is.
All right, it's time to end this segment. And what do you guys say we take a bite out of a little movie?
I couldn't possibly.
Let's talk about a movie called Excess Flesh.
You're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Excess Flesh is a 2015 horror film directed by Patrick Kennelly, starring Bethany Orr and Mary Loveless. Sam, would you do us the honors and tell us what this movie's about?
Jill is obsessed with her new roommate, Jennifer, a promiscuous and sexy hotshot in the LA fashion scene. New to the city and recently single, Jill is unable to keep up as she binges and purges to stay thin, eventually hating herself and everyone around her. Her jealousy and rage spiral out of control. Jennifer has everything, and Jill wants to be just like her. If Jill can't be Jennifer, she must destroy her.
What do you guys think, Kelly? Are you still researching Nick Cage over here?
A little bit.
All right. I'm going to start with you just to break that up.
You hate my research.
No, I love research. Let's just review a
it's
movie.
It's not timely.
No, that's fine. It's interesting. We've done a few kind of... high-level horrors this year, I would say. And
you would consider this one?
I would. It's not quite my speed, for obvious reasons. However, I did buy into the disgusting nature of it a little bit more easily than I typically do. The storyline and its connection to eating disorders makes it a little bit more accessible because, as Sam pointed out when we were watching it, very few of us know anyone who has had a legit home invasion, but almost everybody knows someone who's dealt with an eating disorder.
Yeah, it's something that could be happening next door right now.
It's more potentially disturbing for that reason, but I did think it was good. The best part of the whole movie was... our lead actress, Bethany Orr, Her acting was unbelievably good. It's some of the best acting I think I've ever seen in a horror movie, to be honest.
Yeah, she fully commits to this character in a physical way.
Yeah, and it's a tough character.
And you have to give the director credit, too, because they held on a lot of shots. There was a scene which some of these scenes I did feel like they were hanging on for a bit too long. But you remember that movie Hot Rod?
Yep.
Where Andy Samberg's character falls down the mountain. It's funny and then not funny, then funny again.
Yeah.
I think they successfully did that in this Easy Mac breakdown segment of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where it kind of drug for a long time and then it hit again.
The scene that you're talking about where she's eating Kraft Easy Mac. It's
several of them. A lot.
It's sad and you feel bad for her. And then it's a little ludicrous. And then you just stop and it's horrifying.
It was almost more terrifying to watch someone succumb to an eating disorder than it is in the movies where someone is planning a murder or like disposing of a body. All these cliches or tropes that we see in horror films, we don't see this every day. And it's real. Like you said earlier, Kelly, everyone knows that this happens.
And some of the other psychological disorders that, like you're talking about, like cutting or, you know, pathological lying, which is something that we explored in Creep a little bit.
Yeah.
The object of this disorder is something that the rest of us take for granted. I mean, you or I, any of us can go down right now and have a piece of cake if we want to. It's not this lurking monster that's chained up in the refrigerator waiting to attack us.
Like in this movie, yeah, which involves a chained fridge.
Yeah. And so I started to think differently about food by partway through this movie.
And I think another thing it taps into that isn't nearly as disturbing as that, but I hope I'm not the only weird one who's experienced this, but when you're really sick and you've been like stuck in the house for a couple of days and you start to go a little stir crazy, but you just feel like disgusting because you've been sick and you're all sweaty and gross and you haven't seen the outside world and you just feel a little bit too close to the edge of craziness.
Your loop head.
Yeah, this tapped into that for me too. Obviously went quite a bit further, but I think that added to just the incredibly unsettled nature of the whole film.
It's kind of on the verge of surreal from the get-go, mm-hmm. And that adds to the level of discomfort.
Yep. And I felt like we could feel ourselves slipping away, you know, one finger at a time with Jill.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another cool thing about the shots, there's all these weird, grotesque, slow motion eating shots.
Oh, that makes eating look horrible.
That are straight out of porn.
I've seen some porn, Sam, as you know.
I mean, the way that they're set, guys, the way that they're lit.
I just realized I've watched a lot of vomiting this week.
You have.
Okay, oh my God. I don't know if that's what it drew for me, but for it,
a grotesque parody of porn, but the close-up, the bodily fluids.
Maybe, but what it did for me was it was trying to put us into the shoes of this girl who literally views eating as a disgusting, despicable, shameful, disgraceful thing by making it look so gross.
And they played sound effects almost like bug.
Oh, the sound design was incredible.
Swarms of bugs or like scraping metal that would play underneath each bite and in the zoom during the slow motion.
I bet Matmos loves this movie.
That wasn't the sound of savoring.
It was not savoring, no.
That's cool that that's what it tapped in for you. For me, it was just like, oh my God, they're making us hate and feel as shameful about the act of eating as this girl does.
Well, I think that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about it like that, but yeah.
I think I lean more on that side, but I see exactly what you're saying. A cool thing that I saw is they didn't have budget for like Doritos bags or Easy Mac.
Yeah, no product placement.
I have a question though. Like, it's not like you have to pay to be able to use a Doritos bag. Doritos pays you to use the bag, right?
I guess it depends on what the movie's about, though. The movie's about someone binging and purging their product. I don't think that's
I guess that's a good point. That's a good point.
I almost wonder if it wasn't more of a statement about
pop culture.
Pop culture and the commercialization of our food supply.
I think
they're just eating generic slop.
And yeah, it kind of highlights the fact that they're eating like fake Doritos and fake mac and cheese. There was nothing healthy.
It's very obvious what they're eating, but it's off, right? It's Bunch of Munch and
Flavoritos.
Fantastic. Fab soda.
Sorry, backing up, Sam, what you were talking about, though, with the porn thing, it does kind of make sense, too, because I think that is tied up in the whole making it kind of this visceral, shameful experience.
And I should clarify, I didn't mean it was an erotic sense. It was the most base,
right,
disgusting.
Right, but I think like that, again, it's tapping into this whole realm of shame, like making you
feel
as...
And the forbidden.
Yeah.
While it's conflicted, it's almost like having a sexual fetish. They're eating Doritos, which is like equivalent to something that someone gets off on but is ashamed of.
Right, absolutely. Exactly.
The movie does kind of show its budget beyond the fake food. There's a couple scenes like that weird webcam scene.
Yeah.
It was almost green screened, and then the actress on the other side, I don't know why they even brought this up. I guess to show the girl's home life, how she kind of had nowhere left to go.
Things looked absolutely terrible on the other end of that Skype conversation. And you're right. Yeah, she's basically totally isolated at this point.
But it dipped the quality of the movie. I think it could have been put across maybe in a phone call. I know that they are trying to highlight the fact that her father was potentially abusive, but that could have been done through audio as well.
There has to be a way around having to use the pseudo operating system, you know. Oh, like, no, she's on Mac OS,
but you look at the screen and it's got like the start button hybrid of some sort of blend, and they weren't using Facebook, they were using something else. I say avoid it if you can't afford it, that's all.
Yeah.
Other than that, shot well, the sound design's amazing. They added in so many little things, like when she's drawing on her with that marker, you can hear the felt just slide across the skin. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the score was so well done. It's very spare, discordant, electronic, and used.
It's disaster piece light, you know, like a mellower version of that.
But it was
very effective at ratcheting up the tension and kind of punctuating some of the more terrible moments on screen.
Yeah.
And as the movie goes, it builds this food waste, which I found was really interesting. I was reading they shot the film in sequence because they wanted to keep this waste building. And by the end of the shoot, which was 3 weeks, the camera crew had to wear masks in there because it was breaking down and smelling.
So aromatic.
That's how you make a film. I mean, like if you go back to Texas Chainsaw.
I knew that's where you're going.
Of course, which was filmed in the middle of summer. I don't know where it was. Was it in Texas?
It was in Texas, I think.
They had so much rotten meat in that house that the smell caused a boom operator to vomit, and it was making the cast sick.
The temperature was, you know, I think over 100 degrees, and it was humid. The cast was just dying, literally.
That's why I really appreciate when people commit to filmmaking at that level.
It shows. You can't fake that kind of loathsomeness.
And for some reason, I don't know if this is just me and being a horror fan that's seen everything so often, the food waste buildup was almost more disturbing than like scenes in House of a Thousand Corpses where they're like Otis is surrounded by dead cheerleaders.
Yes.
I guess it's because it's all affecting our main character. It's signs of her downfall.
Yeah, it's the detritus of her descent into madness.
This movie is kind of like the inverse of Felt in the sense that I think all of us recognize that it's a really well done, very interesting social commentary and horror movie, and it's very effective and visceral and disturbing. But I think it resonated slightly better with you guys, and I think Felt was the exact opposite. I think all of us similarly felt that way, but it resonated a little bit more strongly with me than it did with you two. I thought it was very good. It was a little gross for me still, but I thought it was very good. The thing that I did really connect with, and I think it hits me a little bit closer to home now that I have a daughter, it's so common for women to go around talking about, oh my gosh, I'm so fat, I need to lose weight. Constantly that being a part of our dialogue, even for those of us who don't have eating disorders. It's just such a permeated piece of our daily life. And it's something I'm trying to be more cognizant about because it never turns out well for little kids when they're around parents who make big issues of those things. You know, it's interesting to look at it in that light because I looked at these women in the beginning of the movie and went, oh my God, listen to the way they're talking. And then I take a step back and I'm like, really, it's only probably a few degrees more than the way you might hear me talking on an average day. I think, again, I use the word accessible, Byron, you use the word grotesque, and I think it's kind of both because it is so relatable that it is more grotesque because of that. And that is something that hits home for me, I mean, as a girl and as a mom, I think.
It's jangling to the nerves for me because, you know, girls are pretty. And then you hear them talking to each other like the girls in this movie did and watch Jill's ever more drastic attempts to conform to this, you know, very commercialized idea of beauty. You know, it's a look into the pressures that women have to deal with that I, as a man, I don't have to. And I don't know, it was very disturbing.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel lucky I had friends who dealt with some of those issues. I feel very fortunate that I didn't myself. But I think it affects all of us these days. I mean, I feel relatively good about myself, I think, but you still can relate to these characters on some level. And it's creepy.
Fortunately, things are looking up in that way. People are focusing more on being healthy as opposed to being thin, which is great.
And honestly, Baron, I think you're absolutely right. But I still, I mean, you look at, especially, God, looking at young girls, teenage girls these days, and the dialogues and the focus, it is still terrifying.
I mean, I'm not around young kids.
So embarrassing confession here.
I'm not Jared Fogle.
Well, okay. God. Embarrassing confession. When I was in college, I worked at Abercrombie. And I'm not kidding you.
You were a model?
No.
Isn't that the job title there?
Well, yeah, but that's okay.
I think that's what that is.
Nice pickup. Okay.
But seriously, if you gained 5 or 10 pounds, they would fire you. Like, there were girls all around me that would get fired because they gained 5 or 10 pounds.
And they're growing too. It's not like you stop growing when you get a high school job.
Right. I mean, it's so creepy, and that sounds horrible, and it is really ridiculously extreme, but it's that kind of stuff that, you know, rarely does somebody suddenly gain 5 or 10 pounds without the women around them taking note and going, oh, wow, they're putting on a little weight. I agree that it's moving in the right direction, but it's interesting. I almost see with some women where now there are dual pressures to be both super, super healthy and still super skinny.
I see what you're saying.
You know, so it is. I think it taps into some pretty common visceral fears for society today.
And there's a lot of things in this movie that we're not talking about. It would be very spoiler heavy. So I think we're going to skip that part.
Yeah,
I agree.
So it's on the festival circuit right now.
Yeah.
So we unfortunately don't have a hard release date.
Nope. It debuted at South by Southwest. And I heard it did really well at Fantasia Fest this last week in Toronto. Before I tell you to check it out, I feel like I should tell you what I think of this movie.
What do you think of this movie?
While it may lose momentum at times, it never stops being gut punching. And I think that that is the most important part of a horror movie to me. It's a completely original thing. I mean, it does have parallels to movies like Slaughtered Vomit Dolls, let's say. But it's a great film.
It's in a different dimension.
Absolutely. Beautifully shot. Great indie. It's a first-time director. I'm always impressed when they can pull stuff like this off.
I agree.
And for that reason, I give it a 6.4.
It's interesting. I thought you were going to give it higher than that.
Really?
Yeah. Similar to Felt, it's an important movie. I'm really happy that we're watching horror films that I actually feel legitimately grounded and justified saying are important to watch. And I think this is another one that falls into that category because it covers a theme and an element in our society that is important to all of us. I would give it a 6.5.
Point one upping me.
Yeah. I mean, I really...
Doing the Price is Right.
Yeah, I guess so. Really, though, I think, like I said, it's a little gross for me, but it was a very solid movie and I think it's definitely worth watching.
I'm going to go 7.0.
All right.
I agreed with all the positive things that you guys said. I loved the look of this movie. I loved the sound of this movie. It was visceral. Every second demanded a reaction, demanded attention, and left you feeling at best uneasy and at worst just awful. I really like this movie and strongly recommend it.
Yeah, that's a strong score for you, Sam.
It is.
You liked it. Yeah.
Also, the titles were rad.
Honestly.
And like you said,
these
the music.
Days, A+ on the titles. Agreed. The past couple movies we've been watching.
It really is. Where do you think our fixation on those comes from, Byron?
Our love for 70s horror, I think.
That could be it. I think for me, it comes from just soaking up the VHS and Betamax, even box covers.
It mattered then because they had to sell the product, you
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. We'd like to say thank you to the Excess Flesh team for sharing this fantastic screener with us.
It was a treat. It
really was.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time. That was fun.
I don't know that I'd say fun.
It was a rip-roaring good time.
A delightful romp.
Hoya Bachu was a good time. But
speaking of good times, we've got some shout-outs.
Oh my gosh. Some wonderful, wonderful fan emails this week. We got actually quite a few of them. Thank you, everybody, for writing. A couple of the great ones, Stacy Parker. from Creepy Kitsch Podcast. Thank you so much for your email and for the shout out on your show, too.
Yeah, their show's great.
It's so much fun. I love that it's girls and it's not ditzy, stupid sounding girls. They're like smart sounding women talking about real horror. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
and, it's great.
And they play the cramps.
They do play the cramps.
And I know you love that.
That's weird. It's like as if that would be one of Sam's jams.
It is Sam's jams. Oh, yes. God. Okay, and another one of the emails we got this week from a fan named Hannah, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, she and her mom are getting into our show, which makes me very happy.
Oh, that's very cool.
I like to share it with my mom, too.
And we also got some great iTunes reviews. I'm going to read one from a lovely lady named Alicia. She says, "Scary good. I'm not obsessed with horror films, but this podcast makes me wish I was. I live vicariously through these three in every episode instead."
That's awesome.
Thank you so much, Alicia. And if you feel so inclined, you could go to iTunes, type in Fright Day and give us some stars, write a review. And if you do, we just might give you some free pins.
Might, definitely.
We will absolutely give you free pins. So once you review us, send an email to contact@frightday.com with your address. And
what if they don't want to write a review, but they want the pins?
Well, they could easily go to shop.frightday.com and buy the pins there. And if they don't want to pay $1 for them, they can pay $5 for them. They could also pay
$500.
Not yet. I didn't allow them to spend $500 on a pin because I think that's absolutely...
Has somebody tried and you've stopped them?
Absolutely not.
I was going to say,
our listeners are smart people.
But yeah, we've got lots of great things at shop.frightday.com, including a brand new Too Ghoul for School glow-in-the-dark t-shirt that I absolutely love.
Damn.
Not just because I made it. Very limited. Check it out.
Yeah, all proceeds go directly to bringing you more Fright Day, which, depending on your point of view, could be a good thing or a bad thing.
And I can buy human sacrifices instead of stealing other people's babies.
Oh, that would be such a relief.
Byron, no. All the money goes to Kelly's snatching Cryptids kids. And Conspiracies exploration.
We're not snatching kids?
No, we're not.
Let's not take anything off the table.
What are we watching next week?
Let's maybe ask people to reach out on Facebook or Twitter or...
That's a great idea. Yeah. We've never asked people what they want us to review. So if you have an idea of a movie that you'd like us to talk about, you can go to our Facebook page. Let's point them that way. Go to Facebook, search Fright Day, and write us there. We'll have some sort of thread available for you to comment. Guys, I'm sorry for all the vomit.
Seriously.
I enjoyed the discussion.
Also, I have something to confess real quick.
Oh, no.
I'm Lucifer Valentine.
Nice try, Byron.
No, for real.
I suspected.
Nice try, Byron.
I'm sorry. I was trying to plug my stuff.
Nice try.
Well, you're always trying to throw up when we're trying to podcast. It gets super awkward.
Nice try. No, he's terrible. Be sure you edit that stuff
when I bring
that
you water,
I said
you always want
that I read
cups.
Of his, because that's horrible.
So now this is a new tradition that I'd like to start on the show to end with. Kelly, you always complain about this house possibly being haunted.
Oh my God, no, what are you doing? No, Byron,
you can't do this right now.
I have to sleep here.
This is
Byron.
Great. This is great.
All right.
God.
So at the Let's end of every is. Show, we ask a ghost what they thought of the show.
No.
And then we wait for 15 seconds and the audience gets to listen to silence. Well, maybe 10 seconds. And we'll just see if we get anything.
Oh my God, I'm so scared.
It's fun.
I like it.
Ghost, please be nice. We're not trying to insult you. I'm sorry.
We're not, why would we be insulting them? If there's any spirit present in this house, I'd like to ask you what you thought of the show. And I'd also like the audience to talk to us about what their thoughts are of the show. You go to Twitter @FrightDay. And
I'm definitely more concerned about what they think.
For sure. Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter @KellyFrightDay, and you can email me, kelly@frightday.com. And I love getting your emails. Getting all of those this week was wonderful. Please send more.
And you love electronic voice phenomenon as well?
I like it when it's not in my house.
I guess we're going to find out. Sam, where can we find you on the internet?
I tweet @SamFrightDay, and I can be reached by email, sam@frightday.com.
And I'm @ByronMcCoy on Twitter. Byron@FrightDay.com is my email address. And until next Fright Day, I am Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Don't puke on people.
Please.